Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, January 29th, 2020. Section A. Abbott visits Midland, Odessa, signs executive order to challenge federal action. Governor comes to aid of energy industry, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. A day after President Biden signed an executive order placing a moratorium on oil and gas leasing on federal lands, Texas Governor Greg Abbott traveled to Odessa for a roundtable discussion with local oil and gas executives and workers. And a day after President Biden signed that order, the governor signed an executive order of his own, one that directs every state agency to use all the power and tools at their disposal to challenge federal action that threatens the vitality of the energy industry in Texas. That can range from opportunities to comment on proposed regulations to opportunities for litigation, he said. Abbott noted he filed 31 lawsuits as Texas Attorney General before becoming governor against the Obama administration, and will use that same tactic to support the industry. One of the main things he heard during the discussion was from those workers on the front lines of oil and gas production who need to know they'll continue to have jobs. It's wrong for this president or anyone else to act like they can end a person's job today and that person will get another job. That's not how the real world works, Abbott said. Clint Walker, general manager at Cudd Industry Services, which hosted the roundtable discussion, noted that the company had had a rough year due to the pandemic and oil market crash, having to resort to layoffs and furloughs to survive. He said the industry's impact, while well understood through the Permian Basin and the state, extends even further. Referring to a large truck sitting behind the participants, he noted that the radiator was made in Houston and the pumps in Fort Worth, but the transmission was manufactured in Indiana and other parts came from Wisconsin and Michigan, among other states. Travis Stice, president and chief executive officer of Diamondback Energy, told the governor that the Permian Basin's surging oil and gas production had presented a generational gift of energy independence. But, he said, as we produce those barrels, we try to keep in mind those men and women who actually do the work and honor them for the fact we have energy independence. Abbott said it's not just actions from the federal government, but from local governments that could threaten that independence. He cited, as an example, San Francisco's ban on natural gas for new construction. He called for the Texas legislature to propose and pass legislation prohibiting Texas cities from banning the use of natural gas. Abbott also called for a bill as quickly as possible to provide civil liability protection to any business that opened and operated safely during the pandemic so they're not in the crosshairs of lawsuits that could put them out of business. The governor also called for an end to what he called double or triple regulations, similar regulations at the local, state, and federal level that make it harder for energy companies to operate. He praised the efforts of Midland and Odessa and other cities in the region to work with the Texas Department of Transportation to address road needs in the region. Those infrastructure needs, whether roads or broadband, was top of mind for Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. He told the governor meeting those needs was important to maintaining the Permian and the state's prosperity. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, traveled to Odessa from Austin to participate. He said as important as the Permian Basin infrastructure needs are, extending that infrastructure from the Permian Basin to the Gulf Coast so product can be moved to market is also important. We need a fair, eminent domain process that doesn't hinder job creation and growth as pipelines are expanded and built. Staples also cited the need for Texas policies that encourage job creation and investment, which is why he wants to see Chapter 313 of the Texas Tax Code reauthorized to encourage investment in large-scale products. He supported the governor's call for prohibiting a ban on natural gas use, saying natural gas is the reason U.S. air quality is the best it's been in a generation. Natural gas is important to national security and the global environment. Abbott concluded the discussion by saying to all the field workers he heard from today, "I want them to know the governor has their back." Abbott on Peyton's criticisms. Economy was marginally impacted by COVID. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Governor Greg Abbott responded to Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton's criticisms of his response to the coronavirus pandemic, saying he kept Texas as safe as possible and the state's economy was only marginally impacted by restrictions. Abbott visited Cudd Energy Services in Odessa on Thursday, where he held a roundtable discussion with local leaders and oil executives. Afterward, he held a press conference and signed an executive order directing state agencies to challenge any federal actions deemed harmful to the oil and gas industry. During the press conference, Abbott was asked about Peyton's decision to not enforce the statewide mask mandate and previous statements that he would support businesses which open beyond occupancy restrictions. In September, Peyton said Midland was open for business, even as an order from Abbott limited and continues to limit business occupancy to 75%. The mayor has criticized Abbott's use of executive orders rather than calling for a special legislative session, saying in November that Abbott's mandates are an extreme issue for him. He's also said state leaders have been acting like kings and queens during the pandemic. Below is Abbott's full statement. "When I arrived today, the first thing that was said when I arrived, first by Diamondback CEO Travis Stice, was that it was echoed by pretty much everybody around the room, and it was nothing but praise for the way that I've handled the pandemic, about keeping the businesses open and keeping Texas as safe as possible. It's the people in this room right here that I work for every day that has kept Texas an economic engine. This is very important. For 6 months in a row, Texas has added new jobs. The last month, we added more than 64,000 new jobs. Our economy got impacted just very marginally over this past year. Texas has persevered, and Texas is one of the leading states in the nation when it comes to the vaccination that will put COVID behind us." Midland's average creeps closer to highest in Texas. By Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HurstNP.com. The average price per of gallon in all 27 large metropolitan areas that AAA Texas surveys is higher than $2 a gallon. AAA Texas reported that drivers in Texas continue to see gas prices increase even as demand for gasoline fell across the country and regional supplies grew, according to data from the Energy Information Administration. Oil prices have been increasing due to optimism surrounding COVID-19 vaccines and the market's hopes of renewing demand later this year. An additional factor contributing to crude price increases is a production cut by OPEC Plus, led by Saudi Arabia. Crude oil makes up approximately 55 to 60% of the total cost drivers pay at the pump for gas, stated AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in a weekly report. The organization showed that Midland's average price crept closer to the most expensive average in the state. The average price of gas in Midland increased by 2 cents to $2.29. That is third behind El Paso and Odessa. El Paso, Odessa, and Midland are the only three of the 27 metropolitan areas surveyed at or above $2.20 a gallon. The average across the state is $2.13. Distributors have told the Reporter-Telegram there are many complexities in the fuel business that impact pricing. They pointed to the high cost of transportation from Gulf Coast refineries and Midland's distance from pipelines. Across the region, Amarillo's price moved 3 cents to $2.05. Abilene's rose from 3 cents to $2.18, the fourth highest in the state. The lowest average in the state was $2.01 at Sherman Denison. 1 year ago, Midlanders paid an average of $2.43 a gallon. The year-over-year average difference cost the state across the state was $2.18. The opinion page. An editorial by Stuart Doreen. Davis served our community in a thankless job. I want to thank Midland ISD board member Rick Davis for his service as school board president. I believe the former school board president worked hard to make education in Midland better, and those who want to blame this man for any school district shortcomings are likely refusing to look in the mirror. I hope readers will go back and read a July 26th opinion article about Davis. The following is an excerpt. There probably hasn't been an elected official under more scrutiny over the past 12 to 24 months than Davis, who more than a decade ago signed up for service on a board where political aspirations have been known to die. Davis, though, hasn't just gone through the motions as a board member and board president. He hasn't treated his time as someone who sought the office to build a resume. He has worked to convince a community dominated by private schools and other educational alternatives that its public school district can be better. The last 7 or 8 months of the school district were some of the best board work that I've seen in my 2+ decades in Midland. Tough decisions were made that will lay the foundation for a brighter future. Thank you, Rick Davis, for your work in making that possible. One last thing. It really doesn't matter who is on the school board or, frankly, who the superintendent is. If a community doesn't engage in making its public schools better, what has taken place in Midland over the last 10 to 15 years will continue. We have been content with poor performing schools like we are content with bad service at restaurants. That is how it is in Midland, we tell ourselves. Until that mindset changes and we put the students, not the adults, first, our community will get what it deserves.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, January 29, 2021. Bike trail coming. The Midland City Council on Tuesday approved a lease agreement with the Permian Basin Bicycle Association to build a 135-acre multi-use trail and disc golf course in southeast Midland. Access to the park will require a PBBA membership for $30 a person or $35 per family. Members also have access to the Odessa Mountain Bike Park. PBBA and the West Texas Trail Alliance are accepting donations for the project at fundtxtrails.org. Vaccine information. The Midland Unified Command Team are administering COVID-19 vaccine to Phase 1A and 1B individuals at the Horseshoe Backstage facility, by appointment only. If you are in Phases 1A, healthcare workers, or 1B, over 65 and or diagnosed with a chronic disease, and have not had COVID-19 in the past 90 days, you can register to get on the list for this distribution and future allocations of the COVID-19 vaccine by visiting MidlandHealth.org/vaccine and clicking on the Click to Register button. Detailed information defining the populations included in these phases is available on the above-mentioned website. Once on the waiting list, you will not receive a phone call to be scheduled. You will be assigned an appointment time and date and receive an email or text message with the information needed. For further questions, visit MidlandHealth.org/vaccine. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. When is it open? Centennial Branch, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, 2503 West Loop 250 North, 742-7400. Downtown Branch, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, 301 West Missouri Avenue, 688-4320. Watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the lawn and landscaping watering schedule, which will allow residents to water 4 days a week instead of two. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. Large item pickup. For residential customers, the City of Midland will pick up furniture and appliances at no additional charge. These items must be placed in the alley in the city right-of-way. The city will not go onto private property. Do not place your item next to the dumpster. It needs to be behind your home, in the alley. These larger item collections must be scheduled with the Solid Waste Division. Please call 685-7278 to schedule the service. Source, City of Midland. Today in History. Today's Friday, January 29, the 29th day of 2021. There are 336 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history. On January 29, 1979, President Jimmy Carter formally welcomed Chinese Vice Premier Deng Xiaoping to the White House, following the establishment of diplomatic relations. On this date, in 1820, King George III died at Windsor Castle at age 81. He was succeeded by his son, who became King George IV. In 1845, Edgar Allan Poe's famous narrative poem, The Raven. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary, was first published in the New York Evening Mirror. In 1919, the ratification of the 18th Amendment to the Constitution, which launched Prohibition, was certified by Acting Secretary of State Frank L. Polk. In 1936, the first inductees of baseball's Hall of Fame, including Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth, were named in Cooperstown, New York. In 1963, the first charter members of the Pro Football Hall of Fame were named in Canton, Ohio. They were enshrined when the hall opened in September 1963. Poet Robert Frost died in Boston at age 88. In 1966, the musical comedy Sweet Charity, starring Gwen Verdon, opened on Broadway. In 1975, a bomb exploded inside the U.S. State Department in Washington, causing considerable damage, but injuring no one. The radical group Weather Underground claimed responsibility. In 1984, President Ronald Reagan announced in a nationally broadcast message that he and Vice President George H.W. Bush would seek re-election in the fall. In 1998, a bomb rocked an abortion clinic in Birmingham, Alabama, killing security guard Robert Sanderson and critically injuring nurse Emily Lyons. The bomber, Eric Rudolph, was captured in May 2003 and is serving a life sentence. In 2002, in his first State of the Union address, President George W. Bush said terrorists were still threatening America, and he warned of an axis of evil consisting of North Korea, Iran, and Iraq. In 2006, ABC World News Tonight co-anchor Bob Woodruff and a cameraman were seriously injured in a roadside bombing in Iraq. In 2015, Rod McEwen, whose music, verse, and spoken word recordings made him one of the best-selling poets in history, died at 81. 10 years ago, with protests raging, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak named his intelligence chief, Omar Suleiman, as his first ever vice president. Kim Clijsters finally won her first Australian Open title and the first major of her career as she beat Li Na 3-6, 6-3, 6-3. Avant-garde composer Milton Babbitt, 94, died in Princeton, New Jersey. 5 years ago, the Obama administration confirmed for the first time that Hillary Clinton's home server contained closely guarded government secrets. An avalanche in the Canadian province of British Columbia left 5 people riding snowmobiles dead. 2 American endurance athletes, Daniel Kartika of Chicago and Becca Pizzi of Belmont, Massachusetts, won the World Marathon Challenge by completing 7 marathons in 7 days on 7 continents. French movie director Jacques Rivet, 87, died in Paris. 1 year ago, a charter flight evacuating 195 Americans, including diplomats and their families, left the Chinese center of Wuhan, the epicenter of the new viral outbreak. They would undergo 3 days of testing and monitoring at a California military base. World health officials expressed concern that the virus was starting to spread between people outside China. President Donald Trump's lawyers asserted at a Senate trial that a trade of U.S. military aid for political favors, even if proven, could not be grounds for his impeachment.
Obituaries and death notices. Alice Rita Schlegel, age 91, left this world on January 24th. The family will receive friends on Friday, January 29th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickenwell's funeral home. Funeral services will be held Saturday, January 30th at 12:30 p.m. in the funeral home chapel. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorial donations be made to Alamo Heights Baptist Church or the Hospice Foundation of America. Chick Wheeler passed away peacefully at home in Fort Worth on January 23rd. The family will hold a private memorial service in lieu of flowers. Memorial donations may be made to the West Texas Boys Ranch. Dana Hale, 57, passed away on Monday, January 25th, after a lengthy illness. Memorial service will be held Saturday, January 30th at 2 p.m. at 5114 East County Road 73 in Midland. They will be following COVID protocol and masks will be required. Michael Wade Frog, affectionately known as Froggy, went to heaven on January 7th at Scott & White Hospital in Temple, Texas. Deanie Humphrey, 79, passed away January 19th. In keeping with her wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Louis C. Lopez, 85 of Midland, passed away Sunday, January 24th. Viewing will be Saturday, January 30th from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Sunday, January 31st from 1 to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Sunday at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Monday, February 1st at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish. Burial will follow in Rest Haven Memorial Park. Tony Lynn Place, age 56, passed away January 22nd. In keeping with her wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, January 29th, 2021. Section A. Abbott promises energy industry protection. Governor orders state agencies to use all lawful powers and tools to resist Biden's restrictions, by Bob Campbell. Governor Greg Abbott led an Odessa roundtable discussion at midday Thursday with 16 representatives of all levels of the energy industry and ended by signing an executive order directing all state agencies to fight any constraints that the Biden administration or Environmental Protection Agency impose or try to impose. Flanked by Cut Energy Services General Manager Clint Walker and Diamondback Energy CEO Travis Stice, Abbott held up the order and said to applause, "This is homework assignment for every agency in Texas. I'm directing them to use all their lawful powers and tools to challenge any federal action that threatens the vitality of the energy industry, in which hundreds of thousands of Texans are employed and from which billions of dollars in taxes and royalties flow." Citing a comment by CUD pump specialist Jesus Macias, Abbott said, "Jesus made it clear that blue-collar workers on the front lines need to know that they will continue to have jobs." And he pointed out that it's wrong for a president or anybody else to act like these jobs could be ended today. Here in the state of Texas, we're not going to say people need to change jobs. We'll protect the energy sector from any kind of hostile attack launched from Washington, D.C. Biden's embrace of the Green New Deal is a job killer and a wrecking ball to this industry that Texas has provided to the United States of America. Abbott said Biden has hurt energy mainly by signing the Paris Climate Agreement and prohibiting new drilling on federal lands. And he said more Green New Deal-inspired actions may be expected. I believe the Biden administration will put on steroids what the Obama administration did, using the EPA in a very heavy-handed way to impose onerous requirements on the oil and gas sector and make it impossible for them to do business the way they do it today, he said. Noting that the city of San Francisco, California, has banned the use of natural gas in such appliances as stoves and water heaters in all new structures, Abbott said to applause that he will propose legislation prohibiting Texas cities and counties from using political correctness to dictate what energy source you use. Acknowledging the presence of State Representatives Brooks Landgraf of Odessa and Tom Craddock of Midland, while saying he would count on their support, Abbott added, "My goal is to cut regulations to make it easier for the oil and gas industry to do business. When I was Attorney General from 2002 to 2015, and the Obama administration was lodging challenge after challenge, I filed 31 lawsuits, most of them against the EPA, and we will continue with that litigation strategy." Asked by the Odessa American what are the principal factors in winning a suit versus the EPA, Abbott said, "By showing that they have gone beyond the bounds of what they've been authorized to do. It's typical of the bureaucracy to attempt to circumvent the laws passed by Congress." During a news conference in the interior of the CUD complex off South JBS Parkway, the governor noted the backdrop of an enormous oil field truck and asked Walker what it was, to which the hard hat-wearing general manager equipped, "It's a piece of equipment." Abbott said he will also seek to improve Permian Basin roads so that such trucks may be felicitously moved and citizens will be safer. In a statement after the event, Landgraf said in part, "I appreciate Governor Abbott's leadership here." His order demonstrates the importance of oil and gas, specifically the significance of the work we do in the Permian Basin. In addition to all the jobs the industry creates, our roads, schools, and nearly every other service provided by the state directly benefit from revenue generated by oil and gas production. Landgraf noted that he and the other members of the Texas legislature convened January 12th at the Capitol in Austin for their biennial 140-day regular session to vote on legislation and pass a balanced state budget. Renee Ease, Abbott's press secretary, said Odessa was the only trip on the governor's Thursday schedule. Congressman Pfluger speaks about busy first month by Michael Bauer. Midland. It's been a whirlwind of a first month for U.S. Representative August Pfluger, Republican San Angelo. From the civil unrest in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago to dealing with the impeachment vote to bringing forth legislation to safeguard the oil and gas industry, the representative of Texas 11th District has had a busy couple of weeks on the job. While he was officially sworn in January 3rd, a ceremonial swearing-in took place for him Thursday at the George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush U.S. Courthouse in the first floor courtroom in Midland, being sworn in by U.S. District Judge Walter Counts III. He talked about his first month after the ceremony, including his first legislation that was introduced earlier this month, called the Saving America's Energy Future Act. "It's a challenging time," Pfluger said. "In these times, we need good leadership that can stand up for things that are important for this district, and those things happen to be critical for our country. Our oil and gas industry energy security is our national security. Any attempt to kill that industry is an attempt to weaken our national security. We have a lot of need for affordable, reliable energy, and the Permian Basin provides that. It's the largest production area in the United States and in the world. This is important to our country." Earlier this week, Pfluger was appointed to serve as a member on both the House Committee on Homeland Security and the House Foreign Affairs Committee for the 117th Congress. "That's important for our border security," Pfluger said. "It's important to keep our eye on China and other adversaries around the world." Pfluger is a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy and served 20 years in the Air Force. "I'll bring a unique voice, having been in the military and understanding critical infrastructure," Pfluger said. "Our oil and gas industry is critical infrastructure, so we need to protect that and make sure that we're doing everything we can to highlight that in a way that still allows us to provide energy throughout the country." The riots in Washington, D.C. from January 6th put the nation's capital on lockdown. The chaotic event soon led to a second impeachment of former President Donald Trump. Pfluger says the time for unity is crucial, while condemning the actions from the first couple of days of the Biden administration. "There's no place for violence, and we've continually condemned it," Pfluger said. "I also called for unity. I went to the inauguration and heard the president in his address say that he's going to unify the country. He's done everything but that. He's divided the country even more with 40 executive actions in the first week. We're going to have to be the voice of reason, the conservative thought process, to keep our conservative values at the forefront. Freedom of religion and freedom of speech are under attack, and it's disappointing to see the actions that they are taking to that are seeking to destroy those ideals and those values." Pfluger, who voted against the impeachment of Trump, has decried the process. "What a divisive way to lead this country," Pfluger said. "I'm strongly opposed to it. There was no due process to the president. He had 7 days left in office. Now, instead of moving the country forward and starting to heal, the Democrats are seeking to divide with this move that's not going to afford President Trump any due process. With the House of Representatives and now the Senate under Democratic control, Pfluger knows of the tasks at hand for him and other members of his party in Congress. It's going to be very challenging," Pfluger said. 140 executive actions in 1 week. A party that wants to silence the conservative thought process. Big tech that wants to censor on Twitter and Facebook and other media outlets. Our challenges are, we are here as people of faith who believe in the good of the country and raising our children with strong family values. This is an attack on us, and we need to make sure that we're standing up for that. And I will be that voice." Pfluger was elected back in November, defeating Democrat John Hogg and Libertarian Wasey Cody. He replaces Republican Mike Conaway, who served as a representative for 16 years. "He was a tremendous leader, and it's an honor to follow him," Pfluger said of Conaway. and it's a critical time in our country to stand up and be heard. I'm grateful for his leadership. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County numbers are not updated daily. ECISD daily cases, 6 students, 4 staff. U.S. cases, 25,456,670 total confirmed and 427,626 deaths. Find out more at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. No clinic today, Friday. Next week's clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates close at 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 5th, tentative, only if vaccines remain. Clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B, most at risk and ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for quicker on-site processing. For those who are not able to register online, they will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short sleeve clothing easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessa-tx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center, 520 East 6th, is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/3JQHZ89. Walgreens is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. For more updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/Y3LNWU83. HEB has requested more COVID-19 vaccine from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine at no cost. To sign up, updates, or for information, visit vaccine.heb.com. Mass effort likely to continue Wednesday by Federico Martinez. Mass vaccination efforts at Ratliff Stadium were halted early Thursday after the last of the initial 8,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine were administered to the public, Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Abbott-Timmons announced during a virtual press conference Thursday afternoon. MCH and the City of Odessa will tentatively resume the vaccine effort at the stadium next Wednesday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. We expect to receive our next shipment of 3,900 doses of Pfizer Monday and resume vaccinations Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, Abbott-Timmons said. We've done a lot of our community during the past 5 days. The goal initially was to vaccinate 1,000 to 1,200 people per day, MCH officials had said. But the process has gone so well, many more doses were able to be administered. People who receive their first shot at Ratliff Stadium are being directed to seek their second shots next month at an urgent care clinic, Abbott-Timmons said. Second vaccines will not be administered at the stadium. MCH will soon be announcing how people can register for their second doses and what those clinic hours will be, she said. Abbott-Timmons credited the first week's success of the vaccination effort to the hundreds of MCH staff, city workers, Odessa police, along with paramedics and fire and rescue, and also many community volunteers. Everyone has been wonderful, and I can't thank our volunteers enough, she said. Organizers are waiting to resume the vaccinations until Wednesday for several reasons. The next shipment of the Pfizer vaccine is scheduled to arrive Monday, but sometimes shipments arrive a day or two late. Waiting until Wednesday also gives organizers time to prepare and organize. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Rohith Saravanan said Thursday that his hospital will receive 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine next week. Those doses have been earmarked for high-risk residents who are unable to travel to Ratliff Stadium. More details of that vaccine distribution will be announced soon. MCH reported Thursday there were a total of 68 COVID-19 patients housed at the hospital, 20 in critical care, and 18 on ventilators. ORMC reported 19 patients, 13 in critical care, and 7 on ventilators. Difficulties and Surprises Spring from COVID by Ruth Campbell. Despite the difficulties that COVID-19 has revealed, Ector County ISD is not returning to normal, Superintendent Scott Murray said during his media call. The pandemic has taught the district a lot, and while there are things they haven't liked, there are things that are proven successful and that ECISD plans to stick with. Going back to the way we were would indicate that we've learned nothing during the pandemic, and we're going to return to who we were before. But we feel, as an organization, we've learned a lot, Murray said Wednesday afternoon. Some examples are technology. Murray said ECISD has equipped every single student with a brand new computing device, either a Chromebook or an iPad. So today in ECISD, our students have significant technology opportunities that they didn't have literally just a year ago at this time. And our students have learned a lot, Murray said. We've learned a lot. Our teachers have learned a lot about the effective engagement of students and technology, and we want to continue that work and be better because of it. Broadband. The district learned during the pandemic that many of its families did not have access to broadband in their homes or had very limited internet access, Murray said. We now fully understand the importance of every single family, in fact, every single member of our community, having high-speed broadband access in their home. We know that is important, so we don't want to return to a time when our families did not have that opportunity, in which our students did not have that opportunity. And so moving forward, we want to ensure that every single family has high-speed broadband in their home. Relationships. Murray said educators have always known that the relationship between a child and teacher or another adult on campus is critically important to student success. During the pandemic, we've learned how important not only the relationship that we have with our kids may happen to be, but also with the whole family. Moving forward, we want to make sure that the relationship between ECISD, our students, and our parents continues to grow and become stronger and stronger. The pandemic has taught us how critical that relationship is to the effective education of our children, Murray said. Food. The district has always known that a good, nutritious diet is important for children. Having breakfast and lunch helps them become more successful academically, Murray said. During the pandemic, we've realized that some of our children do not have access to daily nutrition in their homes, so we now provide free breakfast and lunch to every single child in ECISD, and we have learned a valuable lesson from that. We want to make sure that continues. We do not want to go back to a time in which some of our children did not eat. We want to, moving forward, ensure that every child, every day, has access to that. There have been some surprises in the course of the pandemic. According to data from one middle school, Murray said virtual students were outperforming their in-person counterparts in reading and English. In math, Murray said, it was just the opposite. We perhaps have painted the picture that virtual has been bad for everybody, but the reality is some children actually do much better in that environment. So, as a school district, we're going to continue to provide virtual courses for our students, those who wish to take them. In the case of this particular middle school, what they're trying to tease out, what specifically are the strategies that their virtual teachers are using that has allowed those virtual students to be more effective? So potentially those strategies could be used in the classroom face-to-face with kids. Murray said the district anticipated learning loss as a result of COVID, and they, along with other schools, other school districts nationwide, are seeing that. Our evidence has indicated that many of our students who are still in the virtual world continue to struggle, and we're anxious for those kids to return to us. On a separate item, the district will have an early release day for students February 2nd. Students will come in as usual in the morning but be dismissed around noon so their teachers can receive professional development, Marie said. March 2nd will be another early release day. Family Dollar announces grand opening. Chesapeake, Virginia. Family Dollar, a leading small format and convenience retailer, has announced plans for a grand opening at 6715 Andrews Highway in Odessa. In addition to providing everyday low prices and a broad assortment of necessities, the new store will include $1 tree merchandise, additional freezers and coolers, and an expanded selection of food, beauty, and essentials, household products, and seasonal items. There will be a grand opening celebration February 6th. A store of this size typically employs 6 to 10 associates. Interested applicants can apply online at www.familydollar.com/careers or by visiting the store location. Local News Roundup. Empty Bowls Fundraiser. West Texas Food Bank has scheduled 2021 Empty Bowls Fundraiser from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at the new Innovative Gardens at the Midland facility, 1601 West Cliff Drive in Midland. Tickets are $15 per person and include the handmade ceramic bowl. For tickets or information, visit tinyurl.com/y3grvqsy. Concert. Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will be showcasing their masterwork series with Mostly Mozart, 7:30 p.m. Saturday at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 FM 1788 in Midland. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. Opening the program is the overture to The Abduction from the Seraglio, a hugely successful opera Mozart was commissioned to write at the young age of 26. This lighthearted piece is known for its interesting use of percussion instruments and rousing finish. Audiences will also enjoy Mozart's 41st symphony, Jupiter. The lengthiest and final symphony he composed is widely regarded among the greatest symphonies in the classical music repertoire. Maestro Lewis has chosen Karen Crutchfield, MOSC Principal Oboe, as the featured musician. Currently in her 25th season with the orchestra, Karen is an accomplished musician and longtime music educator. Her talents will be showcased in David Mulliken's Oboe Concerto. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/y606x5ha. MC program awarded best in class. Midland. January 21st, the Texas Workforce Commission, TWC, announced that Midland College's Adult Education and Literacy Program has been named a best-in-class award winner for program year 2019-20. The award will be presented in a virtual session February 10th during the Texas Association of Literacy and Adult Education, TALAE, State Conference. I am so proud of our entire adult education and literacy staff and teachers who work tirelessly to deliver quality services to our Permian Basin students, Dale Bykirk, MC Dean of Adult and Continuing Education, said. The COVID pandemic caused program year 2019-20 to be an especially hard year for everyone, and I thank the TWC's Office of Adult Education and Literacy for their support and guidance throughout the year. I am honored and looking forward to accepting this award for Midland College. The Best in Class Award is a performance-driven quality award focusing on meeting targeted measures such as skills gained, credentials achieved, and enrollment goals met. The Midland College Adult Education and Literacy Program is one of only six throughout the state receiving this award. The award recognizes the accomplishments of the program from July 1, 2019 through June 30, 2020. The MC Adult and Education Literacy Program encompasses high equivalency preparation, GED classes, and English as a Second Language, ESL classes. The MC employee team consists of Bykirk, who has oversight of the program, Louisa Nail, ESL coordinator, Shanna Hans, GED coordinator, Monique Herford, Adult Education and Literacy Secretary, and Daisy DeLucas, Adult Education and Literacy Grant Accountant. For almost 50 years, the Adult Education Program at Midland College has played a significant role in educating the populace of the Permian Basin, Damon Kennedy, MC Vice President of Instructional Services, said. Now, perhaps more than ever, is the time to provide opportunities to everyone, and Midland College is proud to do so through programs such as Adult Education and Literacy. Each year, our classes in this program serve more than 1,000 Midland residents and help them acquire the skills needed to earn a high school diploma and succeed in college and the workforce. Students in these classes are usually those who are considered non-traditional college students. However, their passion for learning is as strong as those who have taken more traditional college paths. This passion, coupled with a drive to succeed, is a direct result of the excellent instruction they had in adult education and literacy classes. Odessa Tourism Ready for Upcoming Events by Royal McGregor. During a small meeting Thursday morning at La Margarita, Discover Odessa officials and the Ector County Coliseum director spoke about upcoming events for 2021. The largest event scheduled to take place this year is the Permian Basin International Oil Show. Monica Chalmer, director for Discover America, said the oil show brings in 300,000 attendees, with the hotel room demand being 23,858 and the economic impact worth more than $15 million. As of right now, it's still ongoing, Chawner said during the meeting. We are excited about that. The Permian Basin International Oil Show is a biennial event and scheduled for every even year. However, the 2020 show was postponed to 2021 due to the coronavirus pandemic. The oil show is scheduled for October 19th through 21st at the Ector County Coliseum. Ector County Coliseum Director Aaron Martin served as the keynote speaker during Thursday's meeting. He spoke about upcoming events at the Coliseum and events that have just finished. Martin said that the Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo was limited to 1,800 seats, which he detailed was 38% capacity. The Coliseum can hold 4,700 people. Martin said the Coliseum is allowed to have 50% capacity, but he can't see that happening with regards to social distancing. Martin said the Coliseum is selling groups of tickets that range from 2 to 6 people, and those groups spread 6 feet apart. Everyone is very appreciative that we are even having events, he said after the meeting, even though the capacity is diminished and there are some extra hurdles that they have to go through, whether it's how they buy tickets or wearing a mask when they enter the building, our feedback has been mostly positive. Martin said the Sandhills Stock Show and Rodeo had 7 rodeo performances, with 3 of those being sold out. He said the surprising part of the stock show and rodeo was the stock show portion, as it saw a 2 to 3-fold increase from about 100 to 150 people to more than 300 people. One event Martin said the Coliseum would be open to would be a parking lot concert. He said concerts will likely be the last thing to move inside the Coliseum. The big shows just aren't happening yet, unless they are in a parking lot, Martin said. We are open to doing that. We just haven't been approached by any promoters. Reading Parade Set. Zavala and Travis Elementary Schools are having a drive-through reading parade. For their Title I Spring Parent Engagement and Building Capacity event, they will have a Travis Reading Parade from 5:30 to 6 p.m. February 11th, and Zavala will have its parade from 5 to 5:30 p.m. as they share so many families. Parents can attend the drive-through reading parade at Zavala and then drive to Travis. Since Travis is a Title I school, it is required to have a spring family engagement and building capacity event. At Travis, parents will start at the parent drive on Monahans and drive around to its other stations. Parents at Zavala will start at their parent drive as well. Parents will be asked to decorate their cars like their children's favorite book. Students and staff may dress up that day for school as their favorite storybook character. Staff will have stations set up to provide tips to parents about how they can work with their child on reading strategies and other items. Obituary for Friday, January 29th. Linda Inman Mitchell. Linda Inman Mitchell, 76, of Abilene, passed away Wednesday, January 27th. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Saturday, January 30th at the Hamill Family Funeral Home, 6449 Buffalo Gap Road in Abilene. Funeral services will be held at 2 p.m. Sunday, January 31st at the Wiley Baptist Church with Pastor Mike Harkrider officiating. Services are under the direction of the Hamill Family Funeral Home. Linda was born September 1st, 1944, in Gladewater to Joe Hyde and Thomas Inman. She graduated from Odessa High School. She married Dudley E. Mitchell in 1963 in Odessa, and he preceded her in death in 2018. Linda is survived by her 2 daughters, Natalie Nance and husband Harlan of Stephenville, and Nicole Farr and husband Dwayne of Abilene, 2 sisters, Janice Hensley and husband Larry of Odessa, and Billy Joe Galvin and husband Donald of San Antonio, 4 grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials may be made to Hendrick Hospice Care, West Texas Rehab in Abilene, or the Wiley Abilene FFA. Memories and condolences can be submitted online at www.hamillfamilyfuneralhome.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.